Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Melanie C. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Tuesday, November 17th, 2015. Today we are reading from the Big Book and we are on page 6, paragraph 1. Today's readers are reading the 12 steps, Hoodie R, the 12 traditions, Mary H., reading the text today, Elizabeth S., Terry H., Martha Z. The reference number for yesterday, Monday, November 16, 2015, 8201. 8201. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors, and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence, and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Hoodie R. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, Melanie. This is Hoodie R., a recovered compulsive overeater in Israel. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you, and I pass.
Thank you, Hoodie R. I will now ask Mary H. to read the 12 traditions.
Good morning, this is Mary in Connecticut, gratefully recovering compulsive overeater. The 12 traditions. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting. declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible for those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service in my past.
Thank you, Mary H. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today we resume the study of the Big Book on page 6, paragraph 1, and I will ask Elizabeth S. to begin our study this morning. Good morning, Elizabeth S.
Good morning, Melanie. Are you hearing me?
Sounds a little bit muffled. Sounds a little bit muffled, oddly enough.
How about this?
Oh, much better. Thank you so much.
Okay,
yeah,
there we
great.
Go. Okay, my name's Elizabeth S. and I'm a recovered compulsive eater in Alberta, Canada. The remorse, the horror, hopelessness of the next morning are unforgettable. The courage to do battle was not there. My brain raced uncontrollably, and there was a terrible sense of impending calamity. I hardly dared cross the street, lest I collapse and be run down by an early morning truck, for it was scarcely daylight. An all-night place supplied me with a dozen glasses of ale. My writhing nerves were stilled at last. A morning paper told me the market had gone to hell again. Well, so had I. The market would recover, but I wouldn't. That was a hard thought. Should I kill myself? No. Not now. Then a mental fog settled down. Gin would fix that. So, 2 bottles and oblivion. So, my name is Elizabeth S., and I'm a recovered compulsive eater in Alberta, Canada, and you see Bill's descent here into hopelessness. How is he going to get himself help? How am I going to get myself help? For me, it was a lot of candies and chocolates that kind of numbed me right out till I was comatose. And even the day after I got my sponsor, one more binge. And the next morning, I woke up in horror, seeing what I was. All the wrappers were on the floor and at night, and I was just like a drunk. And that was a hard thought to admit that I was just like a drunk. And I always thought I was better than that. But if I couldn't handle life, then I just used just sugary substances to numb out and figuring that would fix it. And really, it was just a slow suicide at that time.
Did you say pass, Elizabeth?
Yes, I did.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Who would like to comment on this paragraph this morning?
Kathy K.
Kim G.
And Kim G. Who else? Anybody else?
Rachel W.
Lynn S.
Hi, Rachel.
Naomi B.
Mary K.
Melissa C.
Janice M.
Amy E.
Okay, we're going to stop with Amy E. We have quite a nice list here. See where that goes with us. I'm going to give you the lineup. Kathy K., Kim G., Rachel W., Lynn S., Naomi B., Mary K., Melissa C., Janice M., and Amy E. We'll start with that. Good morning, Kathy K.
Thank you, Melanie, for your service. This is Kathy K., a recovered compulsive overeater from Boston. You know, I just love revisiting this paragraph because it is so easy for me to forget that I actually experienced this kind of horror and hopelessness. And I just want to say out loud so I don't forget it, I almost killed myself behind the wheels of a car the day after a binge because I had overeaten so much I needed to take more insulin as a type 1 diabetic. And while I was behind the wheel, my blood sugar plummeted. And I almost killed other people as well as myself because I basically lost consciousness. And this was all due to my disease. It took that, really, because I had for so many years minimized the seriousness of my disease only because I didn't have a lot of weight to lose. But boy, was I doing damage to my body and my soul, and creating dangers for other people as well as myself. So I totally identify with the remorse, horror, and helplessness, absolutely, and I never want to forget it. And, the disease is not only a killer, but it often lives invisibly around us. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kathy Kay. Kim G.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, all. My name is Kim G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from South Jersey. You know, if alcohol was really Bill's problem, we've seen him get sober many times in these first six pages. So he would have been okay if he had just had an alcohol problem. What I love about this paragraph is it really describes what the true problem of the alcoholic is. You know, my real problem is not when I open up the bag of Doritos. My real problem is what do I do when the bag of Doritos is empty? So we see words in here like my brain raced uncontrollably, a sense of impending calamity, writhing nerves. That's my state when I am not eating. My real problem is abstinence, because if my real problem was food and weight, I had gotten abstinent thousands of times. I have lost weight dozens of times. My real problem is I don't know how to live life when I am not eating. So my writhing nerves were stilled at last, and I shared this in the after meeting yesterday, but I want to share it again because this really shows me the torture of the alcoholic mind. You know, I was in my mid to late 20s. I'm living with my parents. Work was so painful. Life was so painful that I would live for the moment I could leave work, and I would go to a grocery store, and I used to eat tubs of icing. And when I would go there, I would buy a cake mix and a tub of icing because that made the scenario look better to the person who would be checking me out. And I would be jonesing for that icing. But when I got in line and I had it in my cart, I could feel my shoulders relaxing. My writhing nerves were steadying at last, even though I haven't ingested the icing yet. Just the thought of having that icing was starting to calm me down. But by the time I got my turn in the grocery line, the thought of driving home the 3 to 4 minutes from the grocery store to my parents' house was so torturous that I would throw M&Ms in there. because I needed something in my mouth to calm me down. And as a recovered person, I can see that now. I didn't see it then. And Bill is the same way. He is saying gin would fix that, so two bottles and oblivion. He's now acknowledging that the alcohol is not the problem. The alcohol is the solution. And for me, I can so relate into that. In the beginning of my career, yes, food would make things better. Food would take away sadness. But at the end, the best that I could hope for and what I settled for and what I craved was to feel absolutely nothing. And that is what oblivion is, absolutely nothing. And it was so important for me to understand that food was not my problem. It was my solution. Abstinence was my problem, and I needed a solution for abstinence. And that came to me in the process of recovery and the 12 steps. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Kim G. Rachel W.?
Good morning, Melanie. Thank you for your service. This is Rachel W., recovered compulsive overeater, calling from New York. This paragraph starts off with, the remorse, horror, and hopelessness of the next morning are unforgettable. You know, in 1994, my sister passed away from non-Hodgkin's lymphoma in Marin County. She was my older sister, and the way that I dealt with it was through just eating into oblivion. And I remember, you know, basically watching her die, and as I was watching her die, I was just ripping off candy wrappers left and right. And I remember remarking to my husband, like, I wonder if this is what an alcoholic feels like. And I had no idea that while I was in my, you know, remorse, horror, and hopelessness, that at the same time, God had created this incredible fellowship in tandem with my helplessness, that you know, while that was happening, there was this whole miraculous fellowship that had developed and was just gaining, you know, thunder. And, you know, I look back at that and I think how amazing it is and how hopeful it is. But, you know, for me, that wasn't even the, I didn't realize that it could get even worse than that, because years later in the program, after I had lost 100 pounds and had been absent for 7 years, I did fail to enlarge my spiritual base, and therefore my spiritual base was smaller, my life was larger, and ultimately I picked up food. And I want you to know, you know, I hope nobody else ever experiences this, but, you know, the remorse, horror, and hopelessness of relapse didn't compare at all with the remorse and horror of the earlier days. And I did, because the unmanageability of, you know, knowing what the right thing to do is and not doing it was just hell. And, but again, thank God. And, you know, God came through for me once again, because while I was in my, you know, in my abyss of pain, all of you were here on the line and elsewhere, you know, recovering and doing this work that, now, you know, thank God I'm back from a relapse, for about a year now. And thank God. And I could only do this with the fellowship that God, you know, has given me and the network of people that I know are his messengers that I have in my life now. So thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Rachel W. Lynn S.
Good morning. This is Lynn S. from Toronto, Canada. This brain, you know, my brain raced uncontrollably with a terrible sense of impending calamity. And I just remember so many times that feeling. And the one that just strings out so clearly is driving down to Pizza Pizza, praying, because there's only 10 minutes left before they close, praying that they don't have a slice so that this binge won't start. And praying even harder that they do, so that I can get the pizza. And just even standing there knowing there's one slice left, I start to calm down. Picking off the top of the pizza before it's even in my mouth, I can feel I'm starting to breathe. Get it in my mouth, and then I'm gone. But where am I gone to? I'm gone to whatever else happens to be open, so I can get the other stuff that I need, so I can continue to breathe and go into oblivion. But what really strikes me is I'm telling you this, and there's probably 300 people on the line, and we all have our stories. Then there's the rest of our meeting, the other 1,200, who all have their stories. And then there's all the others out there who have this story and are perhaps living it right now. And it just struck me the enormity of this disease, how strong it is in each and every one of us, and how it affects so many, many people. I am so grateful that I am not there right now, right this minute, today. I wasn't there yesterday, and I haven't been there for a few yesterdays before that. I am just so grateful for this meeting and the program. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Lynn S. Naomi B.
Thank you, Melanie. Thank you for your service. Well, I too am going to hone in on this sentence. My brain raced uncontrollably, and there was a terrible sense of impending calamity. Well, as we're reading, Bill hasn't hit his bottom yet, but I know what it is to hit the bottom. And I tried on my own power to fight this problem, to fight this battle, this hopeless battle of food compulsion. And I remember when I was working through the steps with my first sponsor from Vision, she said, if ever you think you could go up against the food alone, you are wrong. And I never could. My mind was, it was hopeless. The battle was truly in my mind. I once went to an AA meeting, my first AA meeting, and I heard the speaker say, a person doesn't die from the alcohol. They die from the thinking. It's not the drinking, it's the thinking. And that's what it was for me. I was all the time restless, irritable, and discontent. I didn't know what was going on, and the only thing that could calm this crazy that was going on in my body was the first bite. And then it proceeded to many bites after that. I too can attest to almost hitting somebody with my car, racing home so I could have this binge food, this poison that I put into my body. I didn't know what I didn't know, and I had no clue because I certainly had a blind spot. Thank you, God, it's not that way today. I live in a calm. I live in serenity. I have restraint of tongue and pen. Restraint of tongue and pen. I keep my mouth shut for so many reasons. And thank you, God, this was never the case my entire life. I'm 68 years young, and it's like, holy mackerel, I'm finally learning to live. Following the sunlight of the Spirit. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you for allowing me to share, and I pass.
Thank you, Naomi B. Mary Kay, you're next. Press star one, please.
Good morning. This is Mary Kay, recovered compulsive overeater just for today from upstate New York. Thank you, Melanie, for your service and everybody on the line. I want to focus in on, should I kill myself? I need to give voice to this because it didn't even end up, and I realize now in my fourth step stuff and some additional work I need to do with working out some amends. But I spent my life running. I was going to go to the top, and I didn't run away. I was going to run to the top, and I was going to prove myself, and I was going to be the best, and I would beat, and I would get myself in a position where people would stop, would respect me, and they would stop teasing me and mooing at me and saying, whispering, "There she blows," you know, all those things that I was certain my job would take care of, and I didn't, and I knew my weight was part of it, but I didn't figure out yet. And I remember a day I was principal. And I remember riding with a colleague from one campus to another along the expressway, and I had this flash of opening the door and just throwing myself out. Oh, my God. Those are the pits of despair and depression and exasperation. And that was more than 10 years ago. And the disease continued to progress, but I kept pushing my way, certain that my self-will would take care of all of this, even though I had God active in my life. This part of it, I never would give up to Him. And I just thank you, God, that He led me to these rooms and to this program, and I am almost 5.5 months abstinent now since early June, and just living one day at a time with so much release from the craziness. And helping others who are helping me, and that the ability to give and give back and live in steps 10, 11, 12. And I just thank you so much for these rooms and for the big book, and that I do believe is God inspired. Thank you so much, and with that I'll pass.
Thank you, Mary Kay. Melissa C., you're next, and then we'll be Janice M.
Hi, good morning. It's Melissa C., recovered compulsive overeater in New York. You know, I'm hearing this morning, and I'm focusing so much on, you know, my crazy head, my racing mind. You know, it's being described so perfectly here, and the solution, you know, was always to pick up again. Like, that's what's going to calm me down. And, you know, it's no mistake that for years, you know, driving to work or driving, you know, to places, to events, places that I needed to show up for, I was consumed with fear. And so I just ate the whole time I drove. I just ate and ate and ate. But, you know, the gin seemed like the solution for Bill here. Well, the food was exactly what I needed to kind of get me to shut my brain down, you know. And I used to kid myself, you know, or believe that it was the flavor, it was the taste of food. Food was delicious, that's why I did it. But this has nothing to do with taste and flavor and delicious, because, you know, I was eating anything at that point. It really didn't matter what it was. It was just whatever it was going to be to calm me down. And so, you know, for me, the most incredible thing happened was that my racing head, my panic, really, that's what it was, became unbearable. And the food stopped working. And I couldn't get my brain shut off. The panic was so great. This feeling that doom was right around the corner for me. And, you know, and it seemed that it happened exactly at 7 a.m. every morning on my way to work. And when someone told me at this meeting, you know, this replaced it. It was like I no longer had to eat in the car because I could hear the message of recovery. And so, you know, thank you. I'm just so grateful for this meeting, which has brought me, you know, through the steps to a relationship with my higher power, which is the only thing that can quiet my crazy racing mind. Thank you. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Melissa C. Janice M.
And good morning to you, Melanie, and good morning to everyone. My name is Janice M., and I am a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. This paragraph reminds me so well of what relapse from abstinence is. It's not relapse from recovery. It's relapse from abstinence. When I was in my disease, I would plan this binge to go into oblivion. I mean, because I couldn't, you know, coming home from work, and I had my son with me, and I couldn't live life. I couldn't face my home. I had to go from being, putting one hat on as being, you know, a business person and then coming home. I couldn't take that because I knew what was ahead of me. So I would stop almost every day and get my binge foods, the ones that I knew. I mean, this is me. Now, this is just my experience, would put me into oblivion.
Janice, we lost you.
Oh,
there you are.
Okay. All right. I don't know where you're here. But anyway, I would plan these binges so that I would go into oblivion because I couldn't live my life on life's terms. I had a, you know, after all, I was full of self-pity. I was coming home. I had a small, you know, I had a son. I had a new home. It was too much for me. So in order to, you know, I can remember wanting to leave a note and I'll just run away. See, I didn't want to commit suicide, but I wanted to run away. And I don't know where I was going to run to. I didn't realize my own disease was going to come with me. And I was full of terror, full of panic, full of dread of living life on life's terms because, oh, how could I do this? So I would eat, go to bed. Sometimes I wouldn't wake until my husband come home from the office. And certainly I couldn't think straight. And, you know, I was frustrated. I was frustrated. I lost all kinds of hope, like Bill did here, hopelessness. And, you know, suicide, running away became a luxury for me. That would be easier. That would be the way out, you know, because the solution didn't work, me getting, you know, into oblivion. I'd have to wake up anyway to the, you know, to these terrors and bewilderments and frustrations. So this is what happens, you know, in abstinence when I'm not recovered. This is what it looks like. This is what my life looked like, you know. So my disease did its job. It did just what it was supposed to do, put me into the, you know, my solution of oblivion that, you know, that this will be the truth now, you know. This will be the truth. So it showed, you know, I was, because I was so hopeless. You know, the hopelessness is opposite of recovery. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Janice M. And Amy E., you're our next person. We'll have one last call after Amy and move on. Hi, Amy.
Good morning, Melanie. Amy E. in Ohio, abstinent and grateful. I love what Kim G. already shared about this, this is how I am in between meals when I'm not in recovery. This is me between breakfast and lunch, my mind racing uncontrollably. The remorse, horror, and hopelessness. The thing is, he goes on to say this in the next paragraph, he lives this way for 2 more years. You know, that is not enough for many of us to get us to put the food down. What is it but an act of grace that separates us from this remorse, horror, and hopelessness and stepping into trust and courage and willingness? You know, they talk about the three elements instrumental in how this program works: honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And thank God for these bottoms. I mean, I'm also really grateful for this paragraph too, because we all eat differently. I'll just share a little bit about my experience in AA. I got sober very young, and I had some real old crusty alcoholic say, "Girl, I spilled more than you drank," and that was probably true. But what my sponsor wisely told me at the time was, "Amy, don't identify with how they drank or the circumstances around their drinking, but how it made you feel. Identify with the feelings." And I identify with these feelings, regardless of whether I was 500 pounds or 50 pounds. These are the feelings that I have between my meals. And this is what I want to recover from, this obsession of the mind that keeps me chasing after that that first bite. Somehow, someday, I'm going to beat this game and I'm going to be able to eat like a normal person. And it was said earlier, the only way out of this conundrum is to turn my will and my life over to something bigger than me, that I trust all of you telling me that this power exists, that it exists for me, and that it will happen for me and to me if I just follow a few simple instructions, which are written here in this big book and which you guys have been so generous in helping me follow. Thank you for your service. Thank God for AA. I pass.
Thank you, Amy E. Would anyone else like to comment before we move on?
Renata.
Monica, Sally. Renata. Sally.
Jody.
And Jody. Let's go with that. Thank you so much. Monica, if you go first, then it'd be Renata, Sally A., and Jody E. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, everyone. My name is Monica, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. The market had gone to hell again. Well, so had I. That was a hard thought. Should I kill myself? No, not now. Then a mental fog settled down. Gin would fix that. So two bottles and oblivion. Oblivion. Unconsciousness. Unawareness. So it was just this whole paragraph. I thought, oh my God, here's the cycle. Here's the cycle of hell that we live. And he's finally realizing, you know, he's hitting further bottom and he's more realization here that he cannot do it. You know, the paragraph above was, I. Excuse me. And he's even to the point, should I kill myself? Remember what he said just one page before, how disgusted he was at the other people who committed suicide? But what is he doing? He still thinks the bottles are the solution, and he's going into oblivion. But what happens with oblivion for us? I got to wake up. You know, it's an attempt to escape, but what happens? I got to wake up. And when I wake up, what am I faced with again? You know, the top of this paragraph, remorse, horror, hopelessness. What an endless cycle. This disease just loves to have us in this cycle right here. But there's a way out, and I'm going to pass with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Monica T. Renata G. Star one, Renata.
Sorry about that. I was talking away. Good morning. Thank you for your service, Melanie. Good morning, family. This is Renata G., grateful, recovered, compulsive reader in New York. Excuse me. I'm going to pick back a little bit on what Monica was saying. You know, this, you know, remorse, horror, hopelessness, you know, that was my reality. I lived in this cycle, and there was no way out. I was, you know, hopeless. I lived in despair. And, you know, when I go down a few lines and it says the market would recover, but I wouldn't. And, you know, that's the lie that my disease used to tell me, that there was no way out, that I was doomed to live that way, you know, in that terrible sense of impending calamity and confusion and powerlessness. But that was not true. You know, when I could really see my powerlessness with this disease, you know, when I hit my bottom, when I had my last, you know, awful binge, you know, and I decided that my life depended on it, when I could really see that, and I started working this program with the same, you know, like the Dr. Bob says, with this, you know, half of the zeal that I put into my disease, I did recover. You know, I gained access to a higher power that took me out of that misery, of that vicious cycle that I could not pull myself out from. And so, you know, I've shared the other day in the meeting that I have a post-it in my big book in Bill's story. You know, my disease really telling me, get up and go eat. You know, this is not going to work. You're just wasting your time. Just binge now. Why wait? And, you know, these are just lies. You know, when I really put the food down, got clean, and worked the steps, like if my life depended on it, it worked. You know, God did for me what I could not do for myself. And today I'm recovered, free, you know, one day at a time. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Renata G. Sally A.
Good morning, Melanie. Good morning, A Vision for You. Thank you, Melanie, for your service to all of us. Sally A., recovered and compulsive overeater in South Jersey. I just want to hone in one more time on this word, the remorse. This word, the remorse, first of all, it reminds me at the bottom of page 151, which describes again in the chapter, A Vision for You, which sums it all up again. They do it over and over. They give us, again, they sum it up. At the bottom of page 151 in A Vision for You, it tells us, it speaks of the four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. And here it describes the same PTSD, this post-traumatic stress syndrome. And that's what it describes for me, the remorse, the horror, the hopelessness of the next morning. Because I woke up to this
post-traumatic stress syndrome for a lot of years. Even after I put the food down, I still woke up scared and shaking of where am I? Am I abstinent? Am I not abstinent? Am I in the food? Am I not abstinent? And the interesting thing about this word, the remorse, you should know the word, the remorse. Remorse means a feeling of being sorry for doing something bad or wrong, a feeling of guilt, annoying distress arising from a sense of guilt for past wrongs. Hello, this is what it was just like. It was this guilt of what have I done again? And what I see in this paragraph that's so crucial for every newcomer who's on the line, for everyone who's still struggling in the food, hear me this morning. You can't fix this. The remorse, the guilt, the horror, the hopelessness all stems from you thinking that you can somehow extract yourself from this problem. You can't. You're powerless. You're out of control, and you cannot get in control. You need help. There is a solution. It's right here. And it begins this morning, this day, with a decision. I need help. I cannot get myself out of this. That's why by the end of this paragraph, this guy is like, get me out of reality. Put me in a place of oblivion, because he knows. He is beginning to be very clear that he is out of control and there's no getting in control. That's why a terrible sense of impending calamity, this terrible sense of impending calamity that he speaks of here in the second or third line, is this post-traumatic stress syndrome that I lived with for years, the reality of I cannot fix this. Oh, my goodness, I can't fix this? If I can't fix this, what am I going to do? And that is a beautiful place to be. That's the reality of this illness that we have. This is a mental and a physical allergy of our body and a mental illness that we cannot fix. You're in the right place. Thanks for letting me share with that, I pass.
Thank you, Sally. Jody E., you're next and last, because we'll move on after you to the next paragraph. Hi, Jody.
Good morning. This is Jody E. in California. Thank you for your service, Melanie, and everyone. So I, too, felt suicidal at one point just before I found Overeaters Anonymous. But I wasn't quite ready to commit suicide, I think. I thought maybe one day I'll end up committing suicide as my mother did at the age of 47. Because there was this hopelessness, this horror, this fear, this unmanageability of my life. I didn't know how to live life. And when I found this big book shortly thereafter, thanks to my brother, who's a member of AA, he gave me a copy, and started reading about the actor who wants to run the whole show, and the show isn't coming off very well. I could so relate to that. I was trying to manage my life, trying to make sense of this life, trying to succeed in life. Oh, maybe I'll do this or I'll do that. And nothing succeeded, or at least I felt that way, that nothing was succeeding. And that even when I got what I thought I wanted, which I had gotten a home, a husband, a child, which is what I thought I wanted, and I was more unhappy than ever. And I turned to flower products, and mostly flower products at that time, to numb the feelings of hopelessness and unmanageability and frustration and confusion that I had. And then this book was just dropped into my life, and I found Overeaters Anonymous, and I knew I had found the solution, but it would take many years for me to get abstinent and many years more to recover. Because this is a very complex disease. It's not just about the body. It's not just about the mind. it's a two, some people say it's a twofold, some say threefold illness. And I have to address all aspects of it. And I'm very, very grateful that I have found this program, Overeaters Anonymous, as well as this line. And I wouldn't be on this call at 4 o'clock in the morning if I wasn't a true compulsive overeater. Though my bottom was not especially low, I probably not reached the bottom that Bill reached. I have not. But I don't have to. I don't have to. I can raise the bottom to hit me by understanding the true nature of my illness and by working these 12 steps, which makes me more aware of even subtle lapses into the compulsive thinking that leads me to the compulsive eating. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Jody E. Appreciate the share. Now we'll move on to the second paragraph on page 6. And Terry H., would you read that paragraph for us and share on that?
Yes, thanks, Melanie, for your service, and good morning, everyone. My name is Terry H., I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Maine. The mind and body are marvelous mechanisms. For mine, endure this agony 2 more years. Sometimes I stole from my wife's slender purse when the morning terror and madness were on me. Again, I swayed dizzily before an open window or the medicine cabinet where there was poison, cursing myself for a weakling. There were flights from city to country and back as my wife and I sought escape. Then came the night when the physical and mental torture was so hellish, I feared I would burst through my window, sash and all. Somehow I managed to drag my mattress to the lower floor, lest I suddenly leaped. A doctor came with a heavy sedative. Next day found me drinking both gin and sedative. This combination soon landed me on the rocks. People feared for my sanity. So did I. I could eat little or nothing when drinking, and I was 40 pounds underweight. And so this paragraph, identifying it with Bill, how he thought, felt, and acted, I guess I'm just going to focus on the first line where it says the mind and body are marvelous mechanisms for mine endure this agony for 2 more years. So my experience with this was, I had periods of abstinence, through this journey. And, the last time that I had abstinence, I had a food plan, I had knowledge of my problem and totally identifying it with Bill, 3 months of abstinence, the thought, my thinking, brought me to a place where I thought I could pick up something that was not on my food plan, off and running for 4 more years of agony, so I can totally identify him with Bill. And, so I've learned from this paragraph, just this line, the sentence, the mind and the body, it's, my mind is my greater aspect. And, having knowledge of my problem does not equal a solution. And that's why, I can identify him with Bill because, I'm hopeless. And, what is hopeless? One who wants to stop but can't. And so, my best thinking, my truth, and where my mind takes me is, I return to the food knowing full well I can't control it. I return to the food even when I have every reason not to, I return to the food when I sincerely desire to stop and, have every reason to. Self-knowledge is just, for me, self-knowledge is just one more reason, one more resource of human power because I can't fix me with me. And it's like being on this hamster wheel. It just keeps going around and around, and I never get off. So I've learned that, my mind will destroy my body. My body will destroy my mind, and it's ongoing. So for me, I can totally identify in with, the agony for 4 more years for myself. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Terry. Hey, Terry. I just wanted to announce to people that we have time probably for 2 people, maybe 3. We're going to have to just barely get into this study and pick it up again tomorrow. And I did hear AJM, and then I hear Larry, and I hear Leah. We're going to stop with that, please. I apologize, but that's the end of our time. So good morning, AJ, then Larry, then Leah.
This is AJ.
Star 1, AJ. Oh, there you are.
This is AJM in North Carolina, gratefully recovering compulsive overeater. And the line that jumped out at me was, as my wife and I sought escape, there were flights from city to country and back, as my wife and I sought escape. And all through these paragraphs that we've been reading for the past week, I keep thinking about Lois, and I think about his wife, Bill's wife, and I think about the people in my family that my disease has affected. It's so easy only to think of Bill and the madness that he's in, and as in the previous paragraph, the dozen glasses of ale followed by two bottles of gin. And I keep thinking, you know, he's stealing from his wife's purse. And what was she doing all this time? And he goes on to say, people feared for my sanity. Well, I'm sure that one of those people was Lois. It's so easy to forget the people in our lives who are as affected by our disease as we are, if not even in some ways more so. I think about my small children when I was, many years ago, when I was so in the food, and the days of their lives that were lost as I was seeking oblivion through excess food. I've been able through this program to let go of my guilt about that, to accept this illness for what it is. It is an illness. To accept my allergy, but I can't help, as we're reading these horrific paragraphs, I mean, just awful, awful what he's going through, and I can't help thinking about the people he's living with and the other people affected by his disease. And with that, thank you for your service. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, AJ. Larry K.
Hey, Melanie. Larry K., recovered compulsive overeater. I'm going to be a minute man this morning here. We're deceived into thinking that our own willpower will overcome no power. And as long as I remained, you know, the principal, the master of my own universe, my own higher power, and that I thought that I could bend, you know, the forces of nature to my advantage, surely my binge foods, you know, were not more powerful than I. And I mean, after all, they look so harmless, and they were certainly so available. And, you know, it talks about flights from city to country and back, you know, as my wife and I sought escape. Yes, me too, you know, minus the wife, of course, because I was too full of false pride and spiritual disease to maintain those relationships at the time. But I certainly sought out geographical cures in the hope that they would answer, you know, my solution. And indeed, they were my solution. See, the Bahamas and Disney World were never my problem. They were just like a box of Pop-Tarts. They were my temporary solution. They brought me temporary diversion from my hell. And yet, ironically, they also served to keep me stuck in my hell, because they often provided me with just enough mind-numbing delusion, you know, to persuade me that I could hold off the tidal wave of my ultimate destruction. And, you know, you see, a trip to the country or a trip to the convenience store, I mean, what difference does it make? You know, they produce the same delusion in my mind, and I defy anyone with this disease like me to convince themselves there's a fundamental difference in that underlying dynamic. Thank God that we have a solution out of this hell. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry K. And Leah M., please share with us. We have a couple of minutes. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks, Melanie. Set my timer here. People feared for my sanity. I mean, certainly this is just such a frightening and vivid and detailed account of, you know, Bill's descent into the madness of alcoholism. And, you know, people do focus, you know, on the actual physical suffering. Everybody focuses on the problems compulsive overeating causes, the obesity, the diabetes, the high blood pressure, cholesterol, heart disease, etc. But that doesn't help you understand compulsive overeating at all. It doesn't help you understand Bill at all. The real problem is that even after all this damage, even after his body is obviously wearing out, even though he's, you know, his body is deteriorating from the drugs and the alcohol now. He's dying of malnutrition. You know, even after all this damage and all this illness and all the consequences, the real powerlessness, the real insanity is that he is compelled to pick up that first drink over and over and over and over again. And, you know, we get to the point, Bill got to the point where he is drinking because of the pain of drinking. And I relate to that. You know, I was binging because of the pain of binging. I did not see a way out. You know, they say that dying is the greatest loss. You know, but sometimes the greatest loss is dying inside while you're still alive. You know, I thought early on in my addiction that I was free. I was eating what I wanted, when I wanted, whenever I wanted. You know, but I didn't realize how foolish that was, because an addict doesn't know what freedom is. We live in bondage. We live in bondage. Bill is living in bondage. You know, it took the program of recovery, and that's exactly why we study this book. This book is designed to bring about an experience that transforms us, that restores us to sanity, brings us soundness of mind, allows us to be free, relieves us of that obsession of the mind. And, you know, that's why we're dedicated to being here every day, because for those who are still suffering, there is a way out. And with that, I pass. Thanks.
Thank you, Leah. Thank you so much for those that shared. And I'm aware that we barely scratched the surface on that particular paragraph. Those that shared this morning, thank you so much. Come back and perhaps finish your thought out, because you all looked like you had not enough time to be able to complete your thought. And then thank you to everyone that shared today. Very, very wonderful shares. And please join us now for a second hour of unrecorded sharing. It's a study that will follow right after our announcements this morning. And we will now close, though, with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Martha Z., will you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Good morning, friends in recovery. This is Martha Z., recovered compulsive overeater by the grace of God, from near Philadelphia. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny.